Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on a sunny North Michigan Avenue on this July 4th holiday. And joining me here in studio is the Illinois State Comptroller, Susana Mendoza. Welcome, Comptroller. Thank you for coming this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. It's a beautiful morning.
I know that your arm doesn't hurt from writing checks because there aren't a heck of a lot of checks to write.
I know. I look forward to the days of carpal tunnel because I can pay people the money that they're owed.
Well, let's go back to Friday and the ruling by the federal court involving state payment to Medicaid providers.
Sure.
We have a backlog of $15 billion in bills that date back for 2 years. And in the process of trying to juggle everything, certainly there are payments being made to providers.
Sure.
Under the auspices of Medicaid recipients, they go to court. There's a federal decree requiring payments to Medicaid providers.
Which is, I believe, over a decade old.
Right.
It's not a new thing.
Right. But they're saying they need more money.
Mm-hmm.
They should be paid faster.
Mm-hmm.
And the effect of that ruling means what?
Well, it's taken our, in the absence of a comprehensive budget plan, right?
Which as is where we stand
yes,
today.
Which is the situation we're in today. It takes our state's finances from what would be horrific to catastrophic. And that's because prior to this ruling coming down, we knew it was coming. We didn't know to what degree the judge would say we have to pay additionally to, from what we pay today. But on, I think it was Thursday or Friday, had a press conference. Maybe it was Monday. I don't even know what day we're in now, Rick. But
it's Groundhog Day.
Last week, yes. I had a press conference where I said that depending on what the judge ruled, our state's finances would either go from horrific, which is what they were, to catastrophic. Because even without the verdict in August, I had already announced that our state would not have enough money coming in on the revenue side, that which means people's taxes, then we would need to actually cover the most basic core operating functions of our state, many of which are decided now by court order because there hasn't been a budget in the state of Illinois for 2 years. So as people continue to sue the state of Illinois because we haven't paid them on time, and I don't blame a single one of those people, including the MCOs or the Medicaid providers, because anyone who delivers a service should be paid for that service. And these people are delivering life-saving services, right? So
We're borrowing against them.
Yes, it's unconscionable. And that's exactly right. You know, it is so sinister if you think about the fact that the state of Illinois has asked people who actually have a heart and soul to shoulder the burden of their irresponsibility because those folks actually give a damn about the people that they care about. They're out there every day making sure that they take out 2 mortgages on their homes. They tap into every possible line of credit. They borrow money from friends or supporters just to keep the lights on and be able to care for the most vulnerable people in our state because our state is asking them to go ahead and work without paying them for those services. It's horrible, but hopefully we'll get out of this. But I guess to answer your question, without a balanced budget proposal, something that will allow us to pay for these services and not just, look, a budget to me does no good if it doesn't have revenues or borrowing associated with it, right? Because we have, as you mentioned, not just $15 billion in bills that haven't been paid, but because we haven't paid those $15 billion, taxpayers are also on the hook for over $800 million in late payment interest penalties alone. So you could see in August, we're going to have less money coming in from taxes than we'll actually have revenue to cover all of the existing court orders. And that means things like schools might not open on time. State payroll, including legislative pay, will potentially be on the line as well. Pensions might be delayed. There's a whole series of combination thereof of what could happen with our core priority payments. But it couldn't be worse. So these guys have to, you know, be the adults that they need to be, figure it out, get the job done for the people of Illinois, because we cannot continue to sustain this type of damage to our finances.
Well, you were looking at the bleak alternatives of what August would bring.
Mm-hmm.
Then you throw on this federal court order.
Right, so it was bad enough. In August, we were looking at a negative $185 million is our best case scenario projection. It could go anyway from 185 to 500. Then the judge drops a boom on us, right? Which was, you have to pay the MCOs, which are managed care organizations, $586 million a month moving forward, starting in July. So now half of that is reimbursed by the state, but it's still, we have to pay
by
it.
By the federal
and then we
government.
By the federal government, but the state still has to pay up front. Then
that's,
we get the money.
And that's
back,
what
right?
I was going to ask you. So to get that you have to spend it first.
That's correct.
To get it back.
That's correct. So it ideal. I mean, you're looking at, if we were negative 185, you know, add 586 to that, and that's where we're at. So pension payments are a huge chunk of the money that gets paid out. Payroll is a huge chunk of that money. Schools, you hear the schools complain across the state, and they should be complaining that they are delayed on their categorical school payments, which are things for like special ed or transportation. But now they're going to potentially be delayed on their core payments just to operate. So when I say that, you know, if these guys don't get their act together and pass a balanced budget proposal here, a comprehensive plan, schools might not open on time. This is just the reality. The money, unlike the federal government, cannot print it. So it's either in the coffers or it's not. And if it's not, then there's only certain things that I can pay for. And unfortunately, debt service has to be one thing that doesn't get touched, because if the state of Illinois defaults on its debt service, then it will never, ever again be able to borrow money from anyone to ever dig out of any hole that it's in. It's the only reason why the state can still borrow today is because
of
in
that,
an emergency,
that
because that guarantee is there. Yep.
Well, and as you said, passing a budget doesn't mean anything without the revenue. And in fact, the schools are finding that out because of the of that categoricals, the special ed, the transportation. They're owed $1 billion. And they're, you've got the school district saying, we don't want you just to pass a budget. We want you to pass a budget that has the revenues to pay for things. When those school districts in the state are $1 billion in the hole, and you've got all of the planning that it takes to put together a school year, and that's just K through 12. Mm-hmm. Talk about your core function of government.
Yeah, and then higher ed has been decimated in the state. And five of the universities are already in junk bond status. It's going to be nearly impossible for them to borrow and recover. They're in dire straits. We had 16,000 students, college-bound kids, instead of staying here in Illinois, a net loss of 16,000 college-bound kids just last year, going to out-of-state universities because of the state's fiscal crisis with its universities. They've been disinvested to at the tune of 75 now, bordering on 80% since Governor Rauner took office just 2 years ago. This has been catastrophic to so many groups. It's not just the higher ed. It's not just social services. It's sick people. It's, you know, businesses. I think the biggest issue facing businesses for why they're leaving Illinois, it's not even because of, it has nothing to do really with term limits or redistricting, all these things that, you know, he's so attached to. It has everything to do with the fact that a business has no stability or predictability in how they're going to manage their business given the state's fiscal climate. So if they can't plan for a payroll, they're definitely not planning for an expansion, right? There's too many businesses planning to close down because they haven't been able to meet their payrolls given the state's hardships with our vendors.
And who wants to do business with the state?
Right.
I mean, knowing what it may take, that it may take a year or more.
Or more, Rick.
In order to get reimbursed.
There's medical providers who have gone almost two full years now without getting a single reimbursement. So that has had consequences on medical treatments for people who absolutely need them. In central and southern Illinois, in central Illinois, in Springfield alone, there were surgeons who were refusing to do, you know, rotator cuff surgeries or really important surgeries unless if the patients paid for half of the cost upfront in cash and then worry about getting reimbursed. The patient would have to worry about getting reimbursed by the state later. And in southern Illinois, where there's less access to medical care of specialty type, you know, I had a university professor who was denied brain surgery out of Washington State University in St. Louis. Washington University in St. Louis, because that's where most of the Carbondale-related folks go. They go into Missouri because that's where those better hospitals are at. But she was denied a brain surgery. I mean, hello, this is not like you cut your finger, right? This is brain surgery. It's life and death. And thankfully, St. Louis University was able to take her on and deal with the state later, right? But I mean, this shouldn't be happening, and it's really impacting people. But unfortunately, there's just a report on NPR that two-thirds of Illinoisans have not personally felt the crunch yet. And it's not until the roads close down, right? Or there's no one working on the highways and the highway, your traffic, your commute goes from an hour to 3 hours. Or God forbid something worse happen on the highways and there's no one there to care for it. It's not until, you know, you hear now a big uproar about the lottery. Oh my God, we can't play Powerball, right? But somehow, like, people, unfortunately, haven't felt what the sick people and the poor people in this state have felt, which has been a complete neglect by this state.
We're speaking to Illinois Comptroller Susana Mendoza. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by Illinois State Comptroller Susana Mendoza. And, you know, we were talking about how people put a face on this crisis. The two-thirds, the NPR study that two-thirds people have not personally felt any effect of it. And part of that is because, you know, government has been running these past 2 years basically funded on autopilot through court orders and mandated payments and those kinds of things. And I have to tell you, I was a bit perturbed personally because, and you know, when we live this, we know it better. But still, this is nothing new, and we've been, there's the horror stories just keep mounting. They're out there. But it's when Powerball and Mega Millions said they couldn't do business with the state of Illinois anymore. And that is the face of Illinois' fiscal crisis, which is ridiculous.
It's so sad, right? I mean, I just had a press conference the other day with a little girl whose mother reached out to me in a complete panic because the state was going to cut off her daughter's ventilator, who she absolutely needs the ventilator to live. This is not like some fashion accessory.
She has one lung, I believe.
She was born with one lung, but she was born without an esophagus. The little girl's so cute. She's 9, and she says that, you know, she was born without an esophagus. It took her like 250 days or so to even get home, right, from when she was born. But because she was born without an esophagus, the doctors are magicians, and they were able to make an esophagus for her out of her colon. And so she says she has a colophagus. She's so great. I know. She's like the most awesome little firecracker. But in any event, so I met her over a year ago, I want to say, just when I was on the campaign trail, just blocks from here. There was a big rally that we had over across from Trump Tower during the campaign. And this little girl was walking back from Children's Memorial Hospital with her mother. And she stopped to see what was going on. And that's when I met her. And she was the cutest thing. And we've stayed in touch ever since. But you couldn't touch her. I mean, to even do anything or give her anything, you had to sanitize your hands. I mean, she's so susceptible to germs. And her mother called me on Sunday and said, I don't know what to do. I'm freaking out. The state wants to take away her ventilator. She needs her ventilator to live. You've seen her. I mean, every 5 minutes, her mom's cleaning out her trach tube. And it's, you know, what the heck is wrong with our state that we would even consider doing something like that? So she said, I'm going to pack my girls in a car and we're going to drive all the way to Washington, D.C. because I heard there's a rally there about what's happening with Medicaid and her daughter's on Medicaid. And I want to be a part of that. And I want my girls to know that they have a voice and that it should be heard. And I said, well, that's a really long trip to take with Elena, who's 9. She goes, I understand that, but this is really important. And Elena wants to be heard. And I said, well, don't drive all the way to D.C. Why don't you come to Springfield? And I'll make sure that we make Elena have the opportunity to say what she needs to say to the legislators, because this is the most important time to do it. So she came down and she spoke. And one of the reporters asked her, if you could tell these guys who are locked up in these rooms, who are deciding what to do right now and can't put their differences aside, if you could tell them anything on how to put their differences aside, what would you say? And here's like a totally off the cuff question to a 9-year-old girl who's got a tube in her throat. And she says, well, I don't know if this is right, but I would say if you try hard enough, you can do it. And I thought that was so powerful. That's better than anything anybody said, right? Like, just try harder and do it. Get the job done. Like, think of her. She should be the face of all of these children who are on Medicaid or sick people across the state of Illinois. That is the most beautiful face, but it's a real face. It's not a number on a spreadsheet. It's not a mega ball. It's a mega person, right? And that is really what this fight should be all about. That's why we do this. And that's why, for me, it's been very frustrating because, yes, I have always been the most optimistic person in the world. And every time I talk lately, I feel like I'm just depressing people. They need to go watch like a movie if they can afford to, that will make them laugh, because there's nothing to laugh about these days. There's nothing to be excited about. I still have hope, though, even in all of my like Debbie Downer right now, that we can get out of this. We can get out of it. People need to tap into that person who lives inside their heart that has a sick kid, or knows somebody who has a sick kid, who understands that the people that care for these children should not be the ones financing the state's dysfunction.
Well, you know, I think of the social services. All along, I've kept trying to play in my mind what it will take, from an external point, not anything in the building. And, you know, I have to say, even something catastrophic, like a major, like the bridge collapse in Minneapolis, or something, a disaster, and which horrific, and I'm not wishing that. But I'm just saying something of that nature. And now it comes down to me about, I think the only real motivation is schools, where it will, I mean, the talk about bringing it home in a way for all of these people, you know, life goes on, whatever. No, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. You start messing with the schools, you're really messing.
Of course. And look, schools, you're talking August. That's the month that we can't even afford to meet our most basic obligations, of which schools are a part of that. And that's going to be a huge, huge deficit, because like I said, at best it was 185. Now we know we have to tack on at least half of that, because we will be reimbursed, right? Of the 586, we'll get half of that back. But within the month, so it's not like it takes a year to get the money back. But you have to count for half of that. So we're looking at like a $500 million deficit, at least in the month of August now. But it gets way worse in October and November. Like October and November, it's almost twice as bad as August. So this is what we're not even, I've said it gets worse in the fall, but I mean, it gets precipitously worse. August is the first time we'll be in this situation as a state ever, but it's only going to be, it's going to be worse. Oh, but here's another point. We keep talking about, like, who I can't pay if we don't have this budget in place, and, like, we have this $500 billion thing. But remember that the school funding, and you make a great point about schools, the school funding, that's irrelevant, because if there's no budget, then there is no appropriation for schools.
Right.
And right now, the only reason if we have the money that I can actually pay for schools is because that's the only part of the budget that these guys actually passed to make sure that parents didn't freak out and knew that their kids were going to school. So it was like a exercise in, you know, what do you call it? Like their profiles in courage, but not, right? So they said, well, we can't afford anything else, but we don't want everybody to vote us out of office. So let's make sure that the kids start school on time. And they appropriated it. Now we've actually run out of funds to cover even appropriated things. So if these guys don't pass a budget, it won't include school funding, so there's no money for schools, period, whether or not I even wanted to pay for it. So even if we weren't at $185 billion, if we had $185 million more than we needed, I wouldn't be able to pay for school funding, because that has to be appropriated by a budget process, and these guys have not appropriated even school funding yet. So, and the governor's already said he does not want a stopgap budget, right? There's lots of people who say no stopgap budget. It's either all or nothing. So if it's all or nothing, then these guys better get the job done if they expect constituents to not show up to the state capitol or at their district offices with pitchforks and torches, because that's what's going to happen if kids aren't starting school on time. And it should happen. It should happen. People should be up in arms right now about this in a nonviolent way, but they should exercise their voice, which is their most powerful tool that they have. And not just assume that we don't care. Maybe people feel that they don't care. And when I put that video out the other day and I said, please, you know, use your voice. I've been talking about this since the day I took office. Nobody can say I haven't. But I think that people should remember that the strongest voice in government is that of the citizen. And that we work for them. So make your voices heard. And many of the comments that I heard back were that nobody cares about our voices. Politicians do what they want to do. But you'd be surprised, folks. Please pick up that phone. Call your state legislators. Call the governor. Call the speaker. Call the Senate president. Call the minority leaders. Call the people who are actually taking these votes, and tell them to actually be profiles in courage and take the tough votes that need to be taken to get the state back towards a path of recovery. It's going to take a long time.
That's Illinois State Comptroller Susana Mendoza, and she and a lot of us will be watching to see whether it's all or nothing. This is the Sunday Spin.